Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante. He is Dustin Schutte. Dustin, how we doing, my friend?
I am doing great, Jim. It is starting to warm up in my part of the country, so I probably still can't quite break out the golf clubs just yet, but I'm doing well. How about you?
I am cold. Now, you know, most of our listeners know we pre-record the show. Currently, as I look at my computer and see the temperature, it's 10 degrees, okay? It went up. We started our conversation, Dustin. It was only 9 degrees. So it's warm. It's a warm up here. So, but anyway, you and I are big baseball fans. Now that the Super Bowl is over, I know we got the NBA, NHL going on. I don't care. It's now baseball season. When do pitchers and catchers report?
Isn't it on the 21st? Is it two? It's less than 2 weeks, right?
Yeah, I believe so. I think it's even like next week, like 15th, 16th. Oh. I know a lot of the pitchers and catchers have already been showing up. So
okay,
and just a little bit of a forewarning to our listeners: you, my friend, are an Atlanta Braves fan.
I am.
I am a New York Mets fan, which instantly makes us rivals. Two teams in the same division.
That's right.
Once baseball gets started, our show could get a little bit ugly.
It could every once in a while, but the Braves would actually have to, you know, make some noise this year. They did a good job for a little while. And then I like to give Jim a hard time because usually the Mets are in the race or maybe leading the division until the last month of the season, and then there's some sort of implosion.
They Mets it. They Mets it.
Yes.
And they find a way to blow it. But Here's my take on this real quick as we get off on our baseball tangent. When I talk to people, I find out they're from New York. I always ask the question, are you Mets or Yankees? And nine times out of 10, they're Yankees, okay? And
right.
My take on that is so easy to be a Yankees fan. You know, to show real character, be a Mets fan. That's character, Dustin, to hang in there with that.
Yeah, exactly. That's how you know loyalty. It's easy to be a fan of the Yankees or the Dodgers, but the Mets, man, you got to stick that one out.
That's right. It ain't easy being me. All right. Let's shift gears. Let's talk actual football. First, get final thoughts on the Super Bowl. Not a terribly exciting game. I didn't really have a rooting interest, Dustin, but that game didn't have me on the edge of my seat.
No, not particularly. I mean, I think through what was it, three quarters, we had 12 points.
Field goals.
You know, basically, yeah, field goal heaven, no touchdowns. And then finally in the fourth quarter, we got some touchdowns there. But I mean, it was a defensive showcase. I think that's probably what people had expected a little bit of. But, you know, for those in Big Ten country, Kenneth Walker had quite a performance, the former Michigan State running back who got Mel Tucker a $100 million contract before he ruined that on one night. But yeah, I mean, just one of the least exciting Super Bowls in recent memory. I mean, I know last year was exciting for Philadelphia, I'm sure.
Oh, but, gosh, yes.
The last two have been kind of duds.
Well, here's one question I will put to you is when it's 19-0 when New England scores, makes it 19-6, puts them within 13 points. They then have a decision to make, kick the extra point or go for two. Why don't you go for two to get yourself within 11 points? So now you could have a touchdown and 2-point conversion and field goal to tie the game.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. Mike Vrabel's old school, I guess. I don't have a good answer for you, other than they may have felt like, considering their defense, that they would Well, that still puts him within 14. I don't know. I don't have a good answer to that. The math just doesn't quite math. Other than, because even if you don't get it and it's 13 points, a field goal still is at 16. So technically, it's still two possessions. If you get it, you give up a field goal, it's 14, it's two touchdowns. So there's no real rhyme or reason to do that. It's two possessions no matter what. If you give up a touchdown, the game's over. You give up a field goal, you're still within two possessions. So why not make it a little bit easier on yourself?
Yeah, I thought, you know, do your best to get within a touchdown and a field goal as opposed to two touchdowns. And final Super Bowl question, and I promise I won't ask you about the halftime show. How about favorite Super Bowl commercial?
Oh, boy. You know what? I didn't pay attention to a lot. I heard the Liquid IV one was good, but I did not see that one. I like the Budweiser Eagle one. Because that was a callback to when they had the puppy. I don't know if it was last year or a few years ago where the horse kind of raised the puppy. So I thought that one was good. But I don't remember. I was in my phone for a lot of the commercials, Jim. Here's what happened. Let me preface this. I don't usually go through my phone a lot during sporting events unless I'm live, you know, have to tweet. But yesterday was my dad's birthday. And all week I'd been like, remember to get your dad a gift. Remember to get your dad a gift. So during commercials, I was actually birthday shopping for my dad, trying to find him something because, of course, I had forgotten.
Well, you made the right choice, though. The Budweiser commercial was phenomenal. And the point where you see the horse, first you see the wings extend, and then the eagle taking off. Fantastic stuff. Don't know what it has to do with buying beer, but I guess I'll buy some Budweiser because of it. All right, let's move on to what we're supposed to talk about. Let's talk about some college football, Dustin. And it's the off season, so the conversation has moved to what's going on with the game. So much of it is changing, and the obvious is the transfer portal, NIL. But also what's going on, the college football playoffs has changed everything. It's now 12 teams, which I think both you and I are pretty happy with. But boy, has it changed the schedule. We're reaching the point where next year the championship game is going to be on January 25th. January 25th. Yeah. It's getting crazy. And some of the suggestions of what they need to address and change has to do with the schedule. So I want to hit you up on a couple of these thoughts and ideas. One of them, which I would think is the easiest thing to do, Dustin, is they have, of course, there's week one when everyone starts playing, and they have this crazy thing called week zero, where there's just a handful of games. And the suggestion is, why not move the whole schedule up 1 week? Which would be like that last weekend in August, get the season started then, and it would then trickle down to an effect, which we'll get to later. But what is wrong with doing that, Dustin? Anything?
No, I don't think so. The week zero is lame anyway. There's occasionally been some good games, but by and large, it's not been super interesting. I know that some teams travel to like Ireland to play, or, you know, there might be one headline game. I think a few years ago, Florida played Miami in a week zero game. But like for the most part, it's forgettable football. You only have three or four games and it's, you know, I know it's the appetizer to week one, but just move everything back. Just go straight for, you know, like you said, whether it's the last week in August or the second to last week, it probably depends on how the calendar turns out. But I'd be much more in favor of that. It seems like that's the first easy step so we don't have to be playing football into basically February.
I'm with you on it. I think one of the criticisms of it is, oh, my goodness, they're playing in August with August heat, especially down south. But high school football starts that early. I would try to make more of those games night games if possible. I know we're all beholden to television and ratings and so on. But you know what? For 1 week, Fox, have big noon Saturday on at 8 o'clock that night instead.
Right. I mean, you can manipulate it where, you know, I don't. you could probably look at the weather in certain areas and say, all right, these games will be played at noon. These games will be played at 3:30. These games will be played at 8 or whatever. Or you could even maybe scatter some more throughout. Like that first full week of the season is usually Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. So you could even scatter some more games on those other days if you wanted to play them a little bit later. Maybe you kick off, you know, on Thursday night, your first game's at 6 o'clock instead of 8 o'clock or whatever the case might be. So there's ways that you can. But the other thing is like, I understand maybe it's not fun for the fans, but the players are practicing anyway. So it's not going to be that much different for them, I don't think.
Well, the other thing as fans, and I know a couple weeks ago you told the story of being at a game that was really uncomfortable at the stadium. They ran out of water and so on. But you know what? As fans, you were asked to go to watch games in December with temperatures mm-hmm. in the teens or lower. Here at Penn State a week ago, they had a hockey game. Dustin, at Beaver Stadium, they had 75,000 people show up, and I think the weather was in the single digits, and 75,000 people showed up for it. I suspect if it were 85 degrees, they'd probably show up also.
I think they would. I think you could bring, if you're afraid about the metal bleachers getting a little too hot, you can get one of those seat cushions and put them underneath, and you could just enjoy your time that way. I think there's ways that you can counter the heat for 3 or 4 hours on a Saturday.
Well, the traditional opening, you know, is Labor Day weekend. So I think 1 week prior, not a big difference in the weather. The one other thing you mentioned about the week zero, not having memorable games. The one thing I would throw out there, if they would continue the way they currently do, how about moving the Army-Navy game from December to the first game, where I think more attention would be paid to it?
You think so?
And it wouldn't interfere with the playoffs.
Yeah, boy. I don't hate that take. Part of it to me is like, I love the pageantry of the Army Navy with usually there's snow falling and it's cold and it's like the atmosphere is nostalgic as well. So for that reason, I wouldn't want to see it moved, but I don't hate that idea. Actually, I'd like to see it moved. Could you play it like Thanksgiving weekend and maybe you play it on Thanksgiving or, you know, something along those lines where you play it that week. And so then it's maybe a standalone game, but it's not a week after everything has already happened. I would like that a little bit more. Now it's tougher because they usually play in Philadelphia, but
yeah, but I just think they still need to make it special. All right, that's it for quarter number one, Dustin. We got lots more to go. Stay tuned.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two of our show. He's Dustin Schutte. I'm Jim Galante. We're talking about college football and specifically the college football calendar, which really need some adjustments considering everything that's going on, NIL, the portal, the playoffs, all of that. And let's hit the playoffs, Dustin, and the schedule. As I mentioned, next year, the championship game is going to be January 25th. The following year, it's scheduled, I believe, for January 24th. You're going to, like you said, you're approaching February. And we'll talk about the portal in a little bit, but you're also now the portal. Either there's players who can't get into the portal because they're still in the playoffs, or if you're pushing it back, there's that being able to transfer for spring semester is too late to enroll at the new school, you, and we all know all of the things that go on and the problems. And I think also they're competing with the NFL playoffs and they're losing. Okay.
Yeah.
So if you're even worried about the almighty dollar, and the other thing to it is, think about this. You have a team maybe who gets a bye. They finish their season, what, like that Thanksgiving weekend or the following weekend, and they don't play the three games till January 1st, January 15th, and then January 25th, where they have a four-week layoff, then a two-week layoff, then a week-and-a-half layoff. That's kind of ridiculous, and we've been seeing more and more evidence that these long layoffs aren't good for these college football teams.
No, I mean, Indiana has literally been the only exception. Like, the teams that have gotten a bye are 1-7 in those games. So, and it just turned out that the team that won one of those games won the national championship this past year. So, but I think, I feel like 1-7 is enough of a sample size to say it's not really an advantage unless you make it maybe a home game, as we've talked about in the past. But yeah, I mean, the long layoffs, you're not getting, I think you could probably take a 1 week break between some of these games, but you're not getting, in my opinion, you're not getting these teams playing at their highest level. Now, there are some outliers. I think Indiana played at a pretty high level throughout the playoffs. I think there were some examples of teams that played really well, but when you have that much break, it's like you're just stopping and going. You're just just stopping and going. And I remember a few years ago, I think it was Michigan State that had a bye week, played a game, had a bye week. And I remember it was when Mark D'Antonio was the coach, and he was like, you can't get into a rhythm. Like, you just throw off all of it when you have that sort of schedule. And maybe it looks good because you think in the middle of the season, you basically get 3 weeks to get healthy, but it throws off the rhythm. It throws you out of your routine and out of your process. And I think that that's a little bit of the case. So I would like to see it more of a week to week basis. If you want to take an extra week between, you know, whether it's conference championships or the Thanksgiving weekend to the playoff, that's fine. But you don't need more than that. Just keep it continuous. I think that there's a way to do that. And I think the easiest way is, again, Jim, to do on-campus games, on-campus playoff games.
Well, I think that is the answer, or part of the answer, Dustin, because I think what they're doing is, much of this is, they're acquiescing to the bowl games. So they're saying that first round is on campus. The second round, where they have eight teams left, this is now their quarterfinals. So there's four games, and they say, oh, that's perfect for our New Year's tradition with the bowl games. And my question is, why do they bend over backwards for the bowl games? Who are they? And they bend over backwards and kiss the behind of the Rose Bowl people, who they designate what time the game is, too.
Yeah.
Just so there's the right view of the sunset over the mountains.
Yeah. I think at one point the bowl games maybe had some leverage, but now I don't think they have any whatsoever. Like, people just want to see good football, and they want to, like, I don't think that there's any, I don't think there's much value in, like, the timing of those bowl games anymore. I think there was a time and a place. Now, I still think that New Year's Day is a great time to have playoff games because of the tradition and the history. So if you wanted to do that and you wanted to have like the semifinals or like the championship would be awesome. But I think even if you did the semifinals, played the championship a week later and you're done by January 8th or 9th or, you know, whatever the math works out to, then that's fine. But yeah, you can play the non-playoff bowl games whenever you want and nobody's going to care. They're going to tune in for those. But the playoff bowl games, I think, need to be a little bit more structured and need to be a little bit more, have some sort of rhyme and reason to them. Because it's still, like, those teams are still competing for something. The other bowl games, whatever. Like, a lot of those guys are opting out. You get your extra 15 to 30, whatever it is, X amount of practices. But I think that the playoff needs to have some sort of structure there where you're playing at least somewhat regularly so you can be, everybody can be playing their best football.
Well, I think I like that idea of put the semifinals on over New Year's. At this point, you have you know, the conference championship games come, you know, early December, like that first weekend. You can play the first round of the playoffs a week or two later, then have the semifinals over New Year's. Now, I think in this scenario, if you wanted, you could push it up even more, play every week, and have your national championship over, you know, New Year's Day, which I do think would make the most sense. But if they want to stretch it out a little bit, one more week, yeah, you still get done by January 8th, and that's still a whole lot better than January 25th, which is their current plan.
Right, and then that opens up, you know, the transfer portal situation. Players aren't having to make a decision whether they want to still be on the team or enter the portal or, you know, give up their chance to compete in the playoff and whatever the case might be. So just it makes more sense to me, and I think at some point they will correct this. But for right now, the going into the January 25th, I mean, you are 2 weeks shy of the Super Bowl. So you're talking about AFC and NFC championship weekend, and I know it's not often on the same day, but – I do think that there tends to be a little bit of fatigue because the college football playoff or the college football season starts a week or two before the NFL. So you've essentially extended this into an NFL season, and maybe I'm sure some people love it, but I think there's other people that, you know, casual fans are probably like, I'll just watch the NFL at this point, you know, if it's going to last this long.
I think you're right. There is that conflict. And what is the attention of the fans? Where is it? You know, once you hit that point in the NFL playoffs, I think that's where the focus is. And the college football, hey, don't be fearful of the NFL, but don't be stupid either. You know,
right.
Try to set yourself up. And I think if you start to, we've traditionally through the years thought of New Year's as being owned by college football and the big bowl games at the time. So why not still make that a highlight of your season? I know now you could say, hey, the quarterfinals, but you're doing that after such a long rest, and then you're giving teams another week and a half or 2 weeks between, you know, the next rounds. I'm with you on it. And, Dustin, you brought up the other point of which is the portal. And those teams that are playing that late, it's not just the players, but it's also the teams having to scout the portal and do portal work. They're busy, you know, handling a playoff. So if they could push the season up a bit, that opens things up for the portal. But how about as another solution? It used to be two portal windows, one in the winter, one after spring practice. What do you think of the idea of I don't see this many places, the idea, why not just make it a spring portal? No portal during the winter. And if you're at all concerned about academics, well, everybody's on an even footing. Nobody could get players in the spring semester. You have to wait till after the spring. And I'll hit the spring practice afterwards, but what are your thoughts on that?
I'm not in favor of it. And this is probably going to be anti-student athlete, right? Because student athlete, but we kind of got away from
air quotes.
Yeah, exactly. I like the idea of coaches and teams having their players for the spring, and that, like, I like them knowing. I feel like it's hard for me to say coaches have gotten screwed in this, but I think programs overall, not knowing who's going to be on your roster, who's going to be on your team, I think that's really hard to deal with, especially in a scramble at the last minute. So I'm in favor of the winter window, just because I think it allows players and coaches and staff to know, okay, this is who we have this year. This is our team. And so I like that aspect of it. I think you could run into a situation in the spring where you're left, if there's, you know, a bunch of guys that decide to leave, you're left scrambling and you have a month basically to fill out a roster. Whereas now you have some time, even if you don't get your guys in by the start of spring, like there still might be some guys we need to add a piece. This guy's still in the portal. We can go get him. I just think it makes it a little bit more cohesive. And then you at least know who you're, and maybe this is more from a fan perspective too. I like to know who's on the team, but when that happens in the spring and people are landing places over the summer, I'm like, well, we don't know who's on the team till fall camp starts. So I like the winter window. I understand the push for a spring window, but I like the January or late December. It was January, the January window.
I get it. I saw a quote from someone. I don't know if it was an athletic director or a conference administrator who said, the problem is no matter which you choose or what you choose, there's going to be ramifications and negative ones.
Yeah.
So it's just a balancing act. What is worse? So I get your thought. I guess the idea, though, for me is, you know what, this scramble during the playoffs, this scramble for, quote, I'm using air quotes too, student athletes mm-hmm. with, you know what, it's not about that. It's because, well, we just got to scramble to get him enrolled so he could attend spring practice. And you have situations with, you know, like at Penn State that had with Bo Pribula, went to Missouri while Penn State was still in the playoffs, but he needed to do that to enroll and get into spring practice and all of that. Whereas, all right, you know what? How about worrying about academics? How about finishing the school year somewhere, then worry about it? We'll talk about it more, Dustin, when we get back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number three. He's Dustin. I'm Jim. We're talking college football. And Dustin, when we finished up, we were talking about, you know, the transfer portal and the timing of it. And if, you know, the debate between you and I, and this is a good discussion because, you know, this is what's happening behind closed doors is, you know, how important is it to get the players before spring practice even, which leads to, you know, my next question about spring practice. What about moving spring practice to the summer? You know, some people say, hey, call it like what the NFL does, off-season team activity, OTAs.
Yeah.
But how about just saying, you know what, scrap spring practice, maybe even give coaches some time off, players a chance to relax and maybe focus on their academics. I know that's a crazy thought. And then, you know what, we'll pick this up in the summer once we've had our – you know, new portal, say, in May, which gives people plenty of time to figure out where they want to go, get to their new school, and plenty of time to register for summer sessions and attend, you know, the off-season team activities.
I don't hate that. I don't hate that idea. If you were to move everything, basically, and then you just condense the schedule into, say, June, July, and August, like so you take away the 1 month that you're working in, or the, you know, the 1 month, quote unquote, we had a lot of air quotes today, Jim, the 1 month that you have to work with your team, in the spring and then push that to summer. That's a good idea. Did you come up with that?
You want to take credit for it? So why not? Let me take credit for it.
You know, yeah. Good idea.
Thank you. I read a lot of these different ideas that folks have, and just trying to, I think part of the problem, Dustin, is if you micromanage one specific issue, you do it and sacrifice another issue. And here's an example of it. Exactly. You know, it's like, well, we miss spring practice, or we have half a team for the spring practice. It's awkward. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe change the portal window and change the spring practice and kind of do that together to get one solution that works for both items.
The one thing I would say is to that would be kids probably during the season even know that they're going to enter the portal. So I know if you, I don't know that you would have to change necessarily the portal window. It, you could probably just implement like, you can't arrive on this campus until May or something along those lines. You can take visits. You can, so you could probably even say, you know, and let's use the current dates. Season ends January 25th. You can officially enter on February 2nd or whatever, a week after. Yeah. And, but the deadline then is going to be April 30th. So you have that time to, but you cannot leave your current school and be on that campus practicing, weightlifting, anything until May 1st or whatever the date they decide is. I would be in favor of that. Because I don't know. I like that model. I just don't know if there would be a reason to restrict the portal window. So that way you give coaches a chance to, that would give them a lot of time to then evaluate talent. I mean, we say a lot of time, they would be, you know, working pretty quickly to do this, but it would allow kids to maybe hear a lot of different offers, take some visits, and then say, actually, you know what? I'm in a pretty good situation right here with this team. Welcome me back. If you were to give a, you know, a couple months, take their time, and I'm in favor of that. I just don't, if you did that, I don't think you have to wait for the portal window or, you know, April or May to open the portal. I think you could probably do it right away and just say, that's fine. You can commit to somewhere else. You just, you have to finish the semester at the current school. You cannot arrive on campus until, and if you want to have meetings with your coaches or whatever via Zoom for playbook stuff, you could do that. You just can't be on campus officially practicing at Georgia until you finish your time at Kentucky.
I like that. However, you know, everything has a repercussion. Here's mm-hmm. what I'm wondering if that repercussion would be, hey, wait a minute. You're limiting me from enrolling at that other school. You could say I can't do any team activities, but you can't keep me off the Georgia campus and maybe enroll as a student. Okay, well, fine. You could go take classes at Georgia. The problem is, unofficially, I'm now working out with the team off campus somewhere, you know. So yeah. All of a sudden it starts to get muddy and murky. That's the only flaw that I see in it. And you know, whenever things get muddy and murky, someone's going to push the envelope.
Yeah, there's a lot of snakes in the grass in this. So I don't know if there is a good solution. Yeah, I actually, the idea of pushing everything back to the summer, because and now spring practice isn't as, the spring game isn't as, you know, important as it once, I don't even know if it was ever important, but it was kind of a cool fan thing to see.
Yeah.
But they've kind of gone on the decline, so I don't hate the idea of pushing it more towards the NFL and then giving some of these guys a break for 2 months or however long it would be. I like this idea that you came up with out of thin air, Jim, just right here in the last 10 minutes on the radio. I think that's a good idea. I still, if they're going to continue to have spring practice, I like the winter window, but if they were to move that, then I would be in favor of pushing the portal window back and then not enrolling until summer.
Well, let me throw, you know, another variable into all this, which is National Signing Day. Which has moved up from February to December. And a lot of it has to do with players. Hey, December is the signing day now, not February.
And right.
The majority of players now, they're signing in December. They're hitting campus on January, enrolling, attending spring practice. Might that also be, hey, if we're not going to have spring practice, I don't need to get the high school recruits here in the spring. And it's like the old world where, you know, freshmen show up in the summer and that's when the first workouts are anyway. Right. And then you don't have to have that early signing period in December, which again, creates so much pressure on coaches who are still coaching, you know, playoff teams. You know, is that worth changing also?
Well, you get into then you also have the situation kind of like the NFL. You create yourself a mini NFL. And I know in a lot of respects, college football is the NFL or, miniature version of it. But the NFL dominates the calendar for 12 months. Like it's a 12-month league. And so I think what you're saying is, so then you basically, we start the season, let's just say September 1st. I know we're talking about August, but we'll say start September. So then you have September, October, November. December is your postseason, essentially. It trickles into January. Okay, now you have a couple weeks off, and then you have we push December National Signing Day back to February. So now all of a sudden, and I think you could still make it a week. It doesn't have to be National Signing Day. It could be National Signing Week. So you occupy that whole week, and you have all your shows and specials and all that. You don't have to, you know, do it in the middle of the postseason. You have that. Then you have, let's say at the end of, so then you have March. Well, March Madness dominates that month anyway. So then let's say we open up the transfer portal window near mid to late April because kids are finishing up classes. It's a good time. So then people are talking about transfer portal. Then at the end of May, you know, maybe you have your transfer portal, you know, your signing day or whatever, and you do specials on that. And then you go June, July, and August, you have OTAs. Then you have, you know, basically fall camp and then through August and then you start the season again. So it's a much more than 12-month calendar. People probably care a little bit more about recruiting as opposed to now because recruiting is all done during the season. So I think it's gotten kind of lost in the dust. People then can evaluate your transfer situation. You can talk about OTAs. You can talk about fall. I think we've just saved college football, Jim. We're new, the new commissioners. Yeah.
Well, and the thing with the signing day, now you mentioned about making it a signing week as opposed to a signing day, and I'm using air quotes here again. I think actually signing day is actually the first day they could sign. So it's even currently they don't have to sign on that day. I think there is a window. Right. Now, one of the other suggestions that I saw was, do you really need a signing day or could you allow players to sign anytime? Or, you know, the other idea is, hey, do you open a small window in August? If you know where you're going, you sign in August, then you could play your senior season of high school football without having to worry about it. Now, the only downside to it is, gee, what if the coach I signed with gets fired? You could always make exceptions for that you can move.
Well, and I mean, I think to this extent too, you could, I think February is a better time for this anyway. I would still leave it the same because then I think if you're looking at it from a business perspective, then you have again, a week of television programming, people talking about it. So it makes sense from a business perspective. I understand what you're saying. You could just sign it anytime, but the February thing, then you don't have a lot of coaches changing jobs in February. Your staff is pretty much set. And so then you know what you're signing with. And I think that then, a kid's not asking for the most part, there's still going to be some outliers, but kids are not asking to get out of their letter of intent. They're not asking to reopen their recruitment, all that kind of stuff. So I do think that if you push it to February, I would still have the National Signing Day or signing week or however you wanted to do it. Because we see so many of this, like the Lane Kiffin stuff that happened in December. So, and then you got, you know, so I think I would keep a National Signing Day or National Signing Week and keep it in February and wouldn't allow anything anytime sooner.
Well, what it also does by moving that back to February is, and looking at what went on, you know, coach here at Penn State, we had a lot of issues. We had, you know, James Franklin move on to Virginia Tech, Matt Campbell moved to Penn State. And these are kids who have already, you know, hey, they had made their travel plans to get to State College, to get to Ames, Iowa, and all of a sudden the coach left. Now, if they were just verbally committed to these programs and, hey, I can't sign until February, it also gives Matt Campbell the opportunity to talk to these verbal commits and have enough time to maybe have an effect on the decision. Or from the let's look at it from the kid's perspective. I get to know who that new coach is and say, you know what? Yeah, I still do want to go to this place because But if I didn't know who the coach was, which is what Penn State was going through, I'm not going to commit if I don't know who the coach is. So, hey, we've solved every problem, Dustin. When we come back, we'll see what other problems we can find a solution for right after this.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four of our show. He's Dustin Schutte. I'm Jim Galante. All right, Dustin, we're going to shift gears. Enough of that calendar scheduling stuff. I saw, and I talked to our colleague Andy Shea about this a little bit last week, but I can't help myself. I pore over these preseason rankings. It's not even preseason. It's a year away, okay?
Yeah.
And some folks, they can't help themselves. And you know what? I think they do this because of me. Me, Dustin, and my ilk, who cannot get enough of these things, okay?
Sure.
It was CBS Sports put out an article. Their Big Ten power rankings, they called it. So I'm not even sure this was a prediction of how they're going to finish next year. They call it power rankings, whatever. But you, my friend, took a look at it, and you were already calling it bogus. Why is that?
Yeah, so if you scroll all the way down, now your finger might get a little bit sore because you got to scroll down 18 spots here to see Purdue. They say Purdue has not won a Big Ten game since September 30th, 2023. That is incorrect. It was November. I don't remember the day, but it was after Thanksgiving 2023 when they beat Indiana, one of the last Big Ten teams to actually beat Indiana. Yes, so that was the fallacy that I saw. I will admit that I didn't read the text for all of them, but I scrolled down because I wanted to see their reasoning because obviously I primarily cover Purdue, so I thought it would be interesting, and they had that mistake in there. So how can we take anything else seriously?
Well, you know what? I think the theory is, wait a minute, we have Indiana at number one, spoiler alert, Purdue at the bottom. How could it be that Purdue beat Indiana, Dustin? So they just said that must be a typo. So they went back to September 30th. So my first question, instead of starting, you know, from the top, let's start at the bottom. You know Purdue. You have an issue with Purdue at the bottom of these power rankings?
No, because they have not won a Big Ten game the last two seasons. And they've won seven games over the last 3 years. So there's a little bit of me. It's like, you've got to prove it. Obviously you got to see it to believe it. I do think though, one of the things they did not spend all of their, I don't know if it was rev share or NIL on the 2025 team in the portal. And so they had some extra money to spend in this year's portal cycle, and they were able to get some guys who were productive at their previous institution. So I think there's a little bit more optimism about the group of guys they were able to bring in, but I don't know who you would put them over because, again, they lost to Northwestern, they lost to Rutgers, they lost to some bad teams last year. So, yes, I think that 18 is fair. And if you prove that you can get out of that cellar, then you can move up a few spots. But for right now, I think 18 is more than fair.
Well, and, you know,
more than fair, Jim, as if they could be ranked any lower.
Well, it does lead to a topic that we'll save for another day where, you know, 2 years ago or so, Indiana and Purdue were probably pretty comparable programs. Mm-hmm. And now one of them is the best team in the country. And the other is one of the worst Power Four teams in the entire country also. So you have to – I think it'd be a great topic of interest. How did that happen? You know, how did one go this way and the other not? But our task today is looking at these rankings, and just I'm going to recite like the first 8 to 10. Indiana, I give them credit. They put Indiana at the top ahead of Ohio State, then Oregon, Michigan, USC, Washington, Penn State, Iowa, Minnesota, and Nebraska. I'm not sure how many that is. 10, 11, 12, 8, 10. I think 10. First of all, any problem with any of those rankings?
I don't think so. I guess to me, I would say USC probably should be lower. And again, this to me comes to coaching and I'll believe it when I see it. Like, I think USC has a lot of talent, but they still are always finishing around 500. So to me, like, I think you've got to be able to prove it. So I would probably have them, you know, in that 8 or 9 spot as opposed to number 5 and just bump everybody up one. But that's probably the only real issue I have with any of these.
Well, I'm pretty good with it, but I think in the Big Ten, and we've talked about this in previous years, I almost feel like you need to group the teams more mm-hmm. accurately than have them, you know, 1, 2, 3. So, well, I'll ask you the question before I give my take on it. Where is the first cutoff? How many teams would you have in that top tier?
Yeah, golly, I would probably cut it off at Oregon. I'm tempted to say Michigan because of Kyle Whittingham, but it's also his first year, and we don't know what to expect. And obviously all the drama, so we have no idea what to expect. So I feel pretty confident cutting that off at number 3.
I'm with you on that one. And one of my universal takes when analyzing a college football team is look at the quarterback. And yeah. Oregon has Dante Moore coming back, which I think is big for them. Ohio State has Julian Sain coming back, along with, and I know he's not a quarterback, Jeremiah Smith, maybe the best player in college football. And yeah. Indiana's been so good at bringing in, you know, transfer quarterbacks. They're bringing in Josh Hoover this year. My assumption is the guy's going to be a Heisman Trophy candidate.
I don't disagree with that. Yep.
So I'm with you. Indiana, Ohio State, Oregon, put them in any order you want. I think having Julian Sain and Jeremiah Smith coming back, all I'm saying, see what I did there? Is yeah. I think when you have that pair of players, if I had to do a tiebreaker. All right, that's the top tier. Where do you end tier 2?
This is going to be probably the biggest tier, Jim. So I would clump, I'm going to just reread them. Michigan, USC, Washington, Penn State, Iowa, Minnesota, Nebraska, and Illinois. So 4 through 11, I would clump those into that second tier.
I see where you're going with that. My question is, how many of those teams do you think have a chance to jump into the first tier? Not win it, but maybe that means they finish 3rd or 4th.
Maybe 3. Let's see. So again, Michigan to me, a big wild card. And here's the thing I would say, Jim. The reason I would clump those seven together is I feel pretty good about where teams like Washington, Iowa, Minnesota, Nebraska, and Illinois are going to finish. I feel pretty comfortable that those teams are going to be between 7 and 10 wins probably. Michigan could be 4 to 11 wins. Penn State could be 5 to 11 wins. And who's USC is probably 6 to 10 wins. So to me, I think that USC, Penn State, and Michigan have the best opportunity to make that jump up into the top tier. They also have the opportunity, depending on how the season goes, because there are so many question marks around all three of those teams, I could see them also finishing in tier 3 if things don't go well. So that's where it's, I would clump them in all together.
Well, that's where, you know, I see your point and I could do that. But like I said, my question of who, I just don't see Nebraska, Minnesota, or Iowa making that jump to the next level.
I don't either.
And, you know, both, and I'll even put a third team in at Washington. You know, they had their DeMond Williams episode, you know, where he entered the portal. They wouldn't let him in the portal. He's now kind of saying the right things. Gee, I got bad advice. I'm happy to be here. Is he? Is he really? You know, I'm going to be fascinated by that. Penn State and Michigan, both, maybe they both lucked out in getting the coach that they did. Yeah. But I think they're both fortunate where they ended up with their coach. And because of that, I think that gives them a shot. But they're equally capable of, you know, being a six-win team. So
that's my hesitancy, exactly that, yes.
So I agree with that. But now, beyond those teams, you know, Iowa, Minnesota, Nebraska, Illinois, do you see any one of those four that's capable of making a jump?
Capable, yes. Likely, no. I don't trust Minnesota anymore. I think that one season at Minnesota, I have a phrase for that I'm not going to use on the air because it's inappropriate. You know, Nebraska's going through some changes. They're going to have a new quarterback. They've got some new staff. I would say Iowa and maybe sometimes Illinois. I feel like Illinois does really well when nobody's expecting them to play well. So I guess maybe Illinois, and just because of Iowa's consistency. But I would probably say if I had to pick one, it would be Iowa just because of their consistency. But I don't have faith in any of those teams that you mentioned to make that next tier. I feel comfortable they'll finish in that second tier.
I think they're, you know, Iowa's going to win 8 or 9 games because they always do. But I don't think they'll win a 10th game, you know. And I haven't looked at their schedule, and which now is always, you know, part of this situation. Yeah. You know, Penn State, you know, we mentioned those top-tier teams, Indiana, Ohio State, Oregon. Guess who doesn't play any of those three teams?
Right.
Yeah. So if they're going to get to that upper tier, it could be for that very reason. Final question, the rest. Is there anybody among the rest that you're saying, you know, that team might surprise us? Not that they're going to win 10 or 11 games, but they might be a 9-win team.
The one team that I'm really curious about, I think – I'll just throw this out. I know we're probably short on time, but I think Northwestern, what David Braun has done, has been really impressive. I don't think they're going to make a big jump. The one team that sticks out to me as a potential team that I don't know what in the hell's going to happen is Michigan State. Pat Fitzgerald, does he come in and not have a Kurt Cignetti type season, but does he get Michigan State maybe to 8 or 9 wins, you know, or do we get the old Pat Fitzgerald?
My thought was, could UCLA be that team with Bob Chesney from James Madison? That's it for the show. Thank you, Dustin. Thank all of you. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.